Welcome to the Kotaku Split Screen Podcast, the video game podcast where we address video games one painstakingly specific topic at a time. My name is Michael Fahey. I am joined, as always, by my podcast life mates. Is that a thing? Can you be podcast life mates?
That puts way too much pressure on commitment for me.
Are you gonna quit? Okay, so Nathan Grayson is my podcast life mate. You just heard him. And Ashley Parrish is a dirty traitor. Hey guys, say hello.
Hi.
Hi.
You're not waving. I mean, you guys can't see because this is an audio podcast, but please wave. Wave your damn hand, Nathan.
All right.
This week's podcast topic is hands.
Of course.
That was the transition. I didn't see that coming.
I just felt very threatened. I started panicking.
That's okay, because if you hadn't shown your hands, it would have just turned into horror and screams. Everyone back off. They showed their hands. That was my radio signal. Anyway, this week we're talking about hands in video games. We're talking about hands because Nathan has been traumatized by hands in video games. And I think that's the main reason. Isn't that true, Nathan?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, we're talking about hands because, you know, Resident Evil Village came out recently, and it is a game that seems to mostly be about bad things happening to hands and little else. Just like, what is the worst thing that you can do short of putting a hand in a blender?
Oh, God.
So I think that is an interesting excuse to focus on hands for an episode, because hands are in many video games. I would say, you know, a good majority of them, at least if you are controlling a humanoid avatar. So yeah, I think to kick that off, what I want to do is kind of like do a pseudo history that's kind of like midway between history and in the headlines. I think the idea is basically I want to trace the lineage specifically of the bad hand stuff that happens in Resident Evil Village.
The bad hand stuff.
It's real bad.
Okay.
Man, I don't like it. I actually like, in part, I have mostly absorbed this like ambiently because I don't really want to play the game, because I have a whole thing where like I just can't deal with bad things happening to hands in media. Like if there is a portion of any movie or whatever where somebody's hand is like getting cut up or something, or, like it's going to get stabbed and they're like building the suspense for that moment, I'm like, cool, I'm going to cover my eyes. Let me know when it's over and I will look again, but not a moment sooner.
Hands don't bother me. It's eyeballs. Like, I can deal with all the stuff that they do to Ethan's hands in Village for some reason. But, like, eyeballs? Or maybe, like, if it's fingernails, then I get fucked up. But
fingernails are real bad.
Hands don't bother me as much. But, like, ripping off fingernails? Ooh. Like, what? I was watching The Fly, and he just, like, when he starts to fall apart, he pulled off.
No.
Oh, man. That was also in District 9.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as hand stuff goes, I'm paralyzed from the chest down. So I'm particularly averse to things happening to hands because I got hands.
You're all hands, all thumbs. Isn't that what it is?
I hope I'm not all thumbs. That would be weird.
But yeah, so
I'm looking at my hands.
Let us dive into how we have arrived at this point in video game history where we can now have super high fidelity hands get torn absolutely to shreds by a bunch of monsters to make you feel weird and bad. The reason I wanted to do this in particular is because like it's really interesting to me that Resident Evil Village is one of the small handful of video games where they convey like damage and horror by messing up somebody's hands. Because hands are so present in, like, especially first-person video games, that you would figure that'd be more common. To be like, well, you know, we have this whole thing where health meters are too contrived, so we're trying to find other ways of showing the characters have taken damage. Why not just show their hands getting progressively messier and worse? Like, that kind of thing. But for whatever reason, it doesn't happen that much. So, how did we get here? In the beginning, at least as I understand it,
God created hand.
Exactly. Well, I mean, God was a giant floating hand in the sky. When he made us in his image, he mainly just made our hands. Then he kind of just like improv'd the rest. He's like, I don't know. It doesn't matter that much. But a lot of games were like, you know, earlier games were not first person. A lot of them were side scrolling and other things like that. So, I mean, hands were just kind of like part of your character's body, or like, you know, Mega Man or whatever. You shot little orbs out of a cannon on your arm. But I mean, like, hands were barely even rendered because they're too detailed, and like early games were rendered in sprites and stuff like that. So there just wasn't much room to do a ton with them. That said, not all platformers were like, you know, who cares about hands? My favorite example of a platformer, albeit not that early of one, that was all about hands.
Really?
Is Mischief Makers for Nintendo 64.
Oh, that's yeah, where I thought you were going. Ruled. But, okay.
So that was a game that had a very formative impact on my childhood, and in which you could grab almost any object in the game world, and then you could shake it. And when you did this, your character went, shake, shake. And in doing so, you were able to shake out loot, or you could like, you could throw things, you could change their function depending on like which things you were shaking. And that's how you like solved puzzles and explored and stuff like that. Mischief Makers is super underrated and extremely dope, and everyone should revere it.
That's Treasure, right? Treasure did Mr. Makers.
I believe so, yeah.
Ah, Mr. Makers.
But yeah, no, that was one of my, that was an early favorite game of mine. I loved it so much.
Aww.
But anyway, the genre that kind of put hands front and center was, of course, first-person shooters. But even then, and I think there's still echoes of this to this day, like, they were there, but they were gun holders. And you were more of, like, a floating camera with a gun attached. The hands were incidental. They were just there to communicate that, you know, there was something holding the gun. Then, like, immersive sims like Thief and Deus Ex and System Shock kind of had them do a little bit more. Had them, like, interact more with the world, pick up things, give your character more of a sense of having a body, because you weren't just fighting stuff. You were sneaking and exploring and climbing and all of that. And then we get kind of more into, to return to the N64 era for a moment, one of the things that came up in our meeting for this episode,
oh, yeah,
were two N64 games that for some reason were really into hands. You had, to my knowledge, the first hand who was a main character of a like platformer action game, Glover.
Damn it.
Yeah, everyone loves Glover. If Faye, if
I
you want to talk
mad
about
if
Glover,
you didn't mention Glover.
Yeah, well, I mean, how could I not? Glover is an international superstar and beloved hero.
It's actually pronounced G Lover.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Hmm. Well, I don't love that. Nope. But anyway, so you had Glover as a main character in a platformer. Good for him. And then you also had Master Hand as the final boss in Smash. Yeah, something was just in the water, I guess, at the time where everyone was like, you know, gloves, hands. But yeah, then, I mean, sort of around the same time, you had Half-Life come out. Half-Life, at least as far as first-person games go, really upped the ante in terms of, like, animation quality and, like, idle animations that are really neat and, you know, have your hands actually doing stuff, which made a lot of sense because Gordon was otherwise a silent character. And so if you're going to have him, like, express himself, then the only real way you can do that is through whatever his hands are doing.
He's still not very expressive. All he does is beat the Combine to death with crowbars.
And yet everyone loves him. And they're all really worried about him. Like, oh my God, Gordon.
Is he okay?
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got to have something going on there. But yeah, so then as time went on, we got into like the early and mid-thousands. First-person melee combat became more of a thing. Like, you know, Half-Life had the crowbar, but it was very like, you just kind of jammed in people's faces. There was no finesse to it. But yeah, then we got like Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay, and Dark Messiah of Might and Magic. These games that were like, you're going to use your hands and it's going to be like very kind of, you know, in your face, really kind of nasty, brutal combat.
Visceral.
Yes. Yeah, that's when everyone started using that word.
Mm-hmm.
Regrettably.
I actually owned those claws from Riddick from Butcher Bay. You know, those little tiger claws he had, the hooked knives with the serrated edges or serrated knuckles on them.
So in your day-to-day life, what do you use them for?
I use them for throwing out when the kids were born so they wouldn't play with serrated knives. Yeah.
Yeah, probably a good call.
Mm-hmm.
Though, I mean, by this point already, I mean, your kids are what, like 12 or something?
Almost 10. They're going to be 10 next month.
I mean, they could be intergalactic, like, space heroes by this point.
They could, but they're not Furians, so what's the damn point?
Oh, you're right.
I should have married a Furian woman.
You really should have.
Damn it.
But yeah, so around that same era, a little bit afterward, you started to have more and more like hands as indicators of your body position and your momentum and things like that. Mirror's Edge is the big example, because like your hands were always present, even when they weren't necessarily like part of the action you were taking. Like, it wasn't just when you were punching or holding something. It was when you were rolling and clambering and all this other stuff. And your hands were very, like, expressive because you were doing all these big actions. You were doing all these leaps and rolls and things. And so, like, your hands conveyed that your body was in motion and that you were more than just a camera, which was kind of, you know, to an extent, I think, the issue beforehand. And then also, like, again, around the same time, a lot more developers who were making non-first-person games started really paying attention to, like, hands and arms and where they were placed. One of the things that you always hear about, like, especially the early Uncharted games, but kind of Naughty Dog in general, is that they will make tons of different animations for their characters' hands and arms that they then kind of chain together procedurally based on, like, where you are in the environment. And so, like, there are, I don't know, I think even in the first Uncharted, like, 5 or 6 different ways then Nathan Drake's hands can like rest against things while he's in cover, like where he will put them and like how he'll lean and like all this stuff like that, just to give you more of a sense of like, instead of him being a video game character who's like, I'm going to do this one thing against every wall I encounter, he's like, no, I'm going to, you know, based on like where I'm at and how tired I am and what I've been going through, I'm going to like be leaning on different parts of my body and whatnot, which is very interesting, but also is like, you know, part of Naughty Dog's whole issue of working people too hard and too long, because like a lot of people really had to work, I'm guessing, a lot of extra hours to make that happen.
Hand crunch.
Yes, exactly. Oh, that sounds terrible.
It's great.
Like you're just putting your hands under like a, I don't know, giant stone block. Just have them crushed. Yeah, not a fun time. But yeah, you also around that same time had the first Assassin's Creed come out. And so one of my favorite video game memories is like the way hands would work in that game when you got close to NPCs is like your guy would kind of reach out and sort of push them out of the way because it was like for moving through crowds and whatnot. And so I would do that and I would walk up. Again, this was sort of like procedural, right? You like hold down a button and your character would go into this mode where if somebody got near them, they just sort of pat them. They'd be like, buh, buh, buh. And so I would walk up to NPCs and kind of push them against the wall or into a corner. And then do that. And so every time the NPC would try to walk away, I just like touch them. And I just do that repeatedly. I took great joy in this. I'm not sure why. Just thought it was very funny.
For the record, those watching at home or listening at home, Nathan is doing these little movements with his hands. And I feel violated by Nathan pushing his hands toward the camera at me. It's really awkward. Stop. Great.
That's another thing about hands. It's not necessarily like what is done to them, but what you can do with them, and like putting hands in face, like real close in face, is like one of those things that are like supremely creep out, like for video games.
Yeah, it's not a normal thing to do in real life. But yeah, so then you get into like the era of walking simulators and stuff like that. If I remember correctly, a lot of like really early walking simulators didn't really have hands because like they were, I mean, even Gone Home, for having been made by developers from a AAA background, was itself like not that high budget. But then like later walking simulators kind of, because you didn't like have weapons, but you still had to, you know, embody a character. They incorporated hands more and more. Like I think Firewatch is the best example of that.
What Remains of Edith Finch is really good for that too.
Yeah, I mean, Firewatch to me, though, is just like, they clearly put a lot of emphasis on it. Yeah, you had this very, like, again, very expressive Pixar-style, like, character. Your hands had those kind of, like, you know, they were overtly kind of cartoony. But, like, when you were doing anything, they just, like, had all this motion to them. And they were very much, like, an extension of the character's emotional state, which I thought was really neat. And I feel like a lot of games sort of embraced that idea a little bit, like in the kind of like late 2000s, early 2010s, you started getting games where like when something major happened to you in first person, like your hands were the expression of that. Like in Bioshock, you'd, you know, inject your powers and then some like gnarly ass shit would happen to your hands. They'd sprout beehives or whatever.
I'd forget.
And you'd be like,
it.
And like, yeah. I think that the Metro games are also low-key really good at that. They're actually good for a lot of stuff. The Metro games are really good for using, like, your hands and arms. Also for, like, here's what's going on with, like, how much breathable air you have left. Or, like, how much flashlight power you have. But then, in addition, like, a lot of stuff in that game gets on your face. Like, you're always wearing a gas mask. And so, like, gunk can get on it. And so can, like, little spider monsters and stuff. And you can, like, manually reach out your hand to, like, wipe it clean. Or you can, like, grab little, you can smash things on your face, and it's gross.
Why on earth would you do that? Like, crushing a beer can? Like, are we in an Ohio State frat? No,
the little, basically little baby spider monsters. Like, you try to, you know, they're obscuring your view, so you want to get them off.
Even if they weren't obscuring your view, you want to get them off.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't generally want to be, I mean, I don't know. Ash, do you want to be covered in like, spiders? Is that what you're trying to suggest here?
Depends on where the spiders come from.
What does that mean?
Oh, they come from
pregnant spawns after that.
Poughkeepsie. The spiders are from Poughkeepsie.
Usually not. I'm amenable to anything.
Okay. Right. Let's reverse the question. Change the question.
No.
Which spiders would be okay?
I don't know yet. Not sure.
You're just open.
It depends.
You're open to spiders. Open to the idea. You're not closed-minded to the idea of spiders crawling all over you. It just have to be, if you found the right spiders.
Exactly.
Okay.
All right. Well
I'm done.
Too much information you guys ever wanted to know about me.
Yeah. No further questions. But yeah. So, like, you know, off of that, I think off of some of that, some of the stuff in, like, games like Metro, you sort of reach the hands as a vector for horror type of idea. But interestingly, Resident Evil 8 is not the first game to do the whole thing of, like, bad things are happening to your hands, and that's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable, unsettled, and, like, you know, in this horrifying environment. The first game that I could find that did that is Outlast, which is a more, like, it's not a fully indie horror game. It's, like, somewhere between indie and AAA, because it was made by a bunch of ex-Ubisoft people. But yeah, in that game, there was a point at which you lost some fingers. And for the rest of the game, you could always see that those fingers were, like, your hand was kind of messed up. So yeah, I'm guessing, I mean, if I had to guess, Resident Evil 7 and 8 took some cues from that, because, like, I don't really see how at this point, if you're making a horror game, you haven't played Outlast. But yeah, you still have this, like, with hands, I think, because, like, okay, so now we're on Resident Evil. And so I do think that it's, like, very good in that regard, even though I don't like that element of it, and having you be more present in the world, having this, like, extension of you not just be there and be capable of, like, you know, punching and pushing and holding, but, like, also be in danger. Because it's, like, in real life, you know, hands are in part for probing, but, like, they're also very precious. Like, you're not going to, you know, if you think something is hot, you're not going to, like, just suddenly, you know, put your hand on it for, like, 5 seconds. You're going to be very, like, gentle about it and be like, oh, no, I'm scared. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that Resident Evil, RE7 and 8 kind of do an interesting job of stepping into that space, even though it's very gnarly and it makes me unhappy to witness.
It's not that bad. I mean, but it's not.
I was gonna say,
no, it's really that bad.
It really isn't.
You don't like your hands? I think you have nice hands, Ashley, and you should take care of them and not let them get ripped apart.
So, I mean, like, even though games like Resident Evil are kind of doing that, I think that we still have this broader issue in video games, and we'll get a little bit more into this later, but, like, hands and games have become more detailed and immersive over time, like, just more generally, broadly. I think in pretty much any game you play these days, you know, there will be some animations that, like, involve your hands and that give you more of a sense of your character than just you're holding a gun or whatever weapon you're going to be wielding. Mm. But interaction is still weirdly limited. Like, you are either kind of a character in combat mode. You're either going to be punching or shooting, or you can, like, press a dedicated interaction key when you get close to something you can interact with. So it still feels like there's this weird kind of box around you. Like you are not moving through a world so much as you are, like, I don't know, kind of forcing your way through it. So yeah, I find that interesting. And I think that the only real medium to kind of sort of break down that barrier is like VR, which obviously a lot of people don't have access to. But we're going to talk more about VR a little bit later. For now, Fahey, would you like to take us away to distant lands?
Would I like to take us away to distant lands? No, not really. Huh. Oh, wait, you want us to take a break? Oh, you should have been more straightforward with that. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back after these commercial messages, if they're there. And if not, we'll just be back in a second.
Do you remember your last great trip? Something on a warm beach, recharging at that beautiful hotel with a view? Actually, when was the last time you went somewhere other than here? Well, when you're ready to book your next trip, you should check out Priceline. At Priceline, every trip is a big deal, whether it's a sunny getaway, relaxing staycation, or even a road trip. That's why they make it so easy to save up to 60% off your favorite hotels. They even have exclusive deals on flights and rental cars. Listen, when you're ready to get a big deal on your next trip, go to Priceline and save.
And we're back. Our second segment on hands in this very special touchy-feely episode of Split Screen. We're going to talk about the best hands in gaming, but also the worst hands in gaming. Now, I'm sure we all have a giant list that had Glover at the front of it, and Nathan ruined that. Yeah, you had Glover?
I had Glover.
We both had Glover?
You know, both of you can, like, talk at length about Glover. Nothing is stopping you.
Glover was an okay hand. I'm not sure.
I appreciated that while he had legs, mm-hmm. he chose to get around by, like, you know, I don't know, what do they call it? Like a lumberjack walking on a ball all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I don't know why they needed to make it harder on themselves, just like rolling around on a ball when you could just walk, because you've obviously, you know, you are capable of that. But
the game's called Glover, but the main gimmick is a transforming ball, because the ball can be a rubber ball, ball bearing, bowling ball, or the crystal form, the crystal ball. They should have called this game Ball for all the thing. And I'm not sure if we can even count Glover, because if you look at the screenshots, there's nothing inside that glove.
We don't know that.
I know, but it looks like darkness.
Darkness is a thing.
Mm-hmm. Is darkness a thing?
Yes.
I believe in a thing called darkness. Sorry. So Glover was on my bad list. I was going to start with Glover. Because he has no... He's just a disembodied hand.
I like Glover. I think he should be at the top of, like... If we're talking about hands...
Okay,
we're talking about the best hands. He's like the embodiment of, like, a hand as a video game character. You can't get better than that.
I think that A, Glover needs to come back. We need a reboot of that series.
That's true.
And B, off the back of that, we need Glover to be in Smash, so then he can finally fight the Master Hand. You can have the ultimate glove off.
Yep.
You mean hand-to-hand combat?
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Very good.
We're done now. We're just going to end the podcast. Bye, everybody.
It is odd that Master Hand has not been added to Smash. Like, do they intend to just, you like, mean, keep him as a all-seeing, like, boss character? Or can we aspire to play him like Waluigi?
I think that he would be a little OP. I mean, that's kind of his whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we had the Glover segue, but let's go to more formatted. Nathan, you first. Mm-hmm. Who is your favorite hand in gaming?
Okay, so there are a few, but I think the one that I'm most attached to, unlike Ethan Winter's hands, which are frequently not attached, Doom 2016. Because in that game, your hands are an expression of unbridled rage, except... when you are picking up collectibles,
and then you do really gentle little fist bumps.
Yeah.
And they are so gentle.
It's like, neat, because the guy, he doesn't have emotions, but that's like the one time where you see him like, oh, like there's personality there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just having fun with his little collectible buddies.
I know I feel kind of like me because I'm this big, strong, strapping guy who's just like kind of like fallen through walls through life to get where he's going and bull in a china shop. But then I'm playing with my toys very delicately. And oh, look at him. I'm transforming him. Oh, yes. There we go. And
very tender. Kittens.
And I just also like how the Doom guy's like hands are often also present for his like reactions to the plot. Like there's the fairly early game scene when like the, you know, whatever the head of the corporation's name is being like, you can do this and that, and that'll like, you know, help us resume control of like Mars. And Doom guy just like breaks the box that he's like talking through to him through. And it's like, yeah, there we go. I mean, you're talking about Doom guy like not having a personality or what or emotions or whatever. I think he totally does. He just expresses them through action.
No. I mean, like up until that point, like we never like Doom guy was just like, you know, a silent avatar, and he's still silent. But like you can see like, oh, there is personality finally in him, like he like ignores people or like you can't crash the thing into Mars or whatever. And he like totally does it and like shows his contempt by like, yeah, I'm tuning you out. I'm just going to bring up the screen in front of me while you're talking and just tune you out. Like, oh, this is where I need to go. That kind of shit. Like, I really like that very wry sense of humor out of Doom guy.
Right, exactly.
Okay, and Ash.
I was just gonna say it fits the tone of that game so perfectly. Like, I think it's one of those little things where like everybody talks about the action and whatnot and how good it felt to play, but I think that without that expressiveness, without that kind of like character driving you through all of the various scenarios, that game would not be as beloved as it is.
Yeah, the hands are definitely a character in that game, and that was a very good choice. But what is Ashley's choice for best hands in a video game?
I don't know. Best hands to me aren't necessarily like, I don't know. Like I'm really more focused on like cosmetics of hands versus like what you do or how like well they're rendered or something like that. But I think like, or best hands that I can think of, like these are hands that I really enjoy, are from Cyberpunk 2077. I know, weird.
Wow.
I really liked, because, you know, there was the whole thing about the character creator and how you can do everything, and I kind of oversold that a little bit. But the little things that they did include, like including the hands, were like really nice, because you could customize like your nails, and you could have like fun, funky nail polish and all kinds of like patterns and colors and stuff, and like different lengths. And I wish they could have been longer, but I really appreciated the attention to detail and how well your nails looked in that game, because you know, it's a first person game and you use your hands a lot. And I could look down and was like, oh, I've got pretty nail polish on. And I appreciated that a lot.
Oh. Would you play a game where there's a manicure studio and you could go in and put your hand down and they do all kinds of funky stuff?
I don't know if I would play that game. I would like to be like, you know, nail artist simulator or something like that, or like acrylic artist simulator, and just like work on like people's like really long like nails, like the characters BAPS or something like that. Like that kind of stuff, I would do that. Like, you know get little fake tools that like, you know, Dremel and shape them into like all kinds of weird shapes or make them super long, and then like, you know, practice art and stuff like that.
Or if you could even take the bad route and be the evil manicurist who just, you know, as you've got them nice and long, and then you just take the Dremel tool and just kind of dig right into one.
But nails kind of, like, fucking with nails messes with me, so I don't know if I would want to do that.
We found it. Nails. Nail messing widths. We found it. I'll go ahead and give you mine. My favorite hands in video game? Why do I keep saying singular video game? My favorite hands in a video game belong to the game Moss, M-O-S-S. It is a VR game, but it's not my hands that I find interesting. It's the little mouse. Moss is a game where there's a little adventure mouse. And it's like a platformer slash a little bit of combat game, puzzle solving. You're like this overseeing you being watching the mouse. And the mouse is, you're controlling them like a platformer. So you're like, I find like that or Lucky's Tale, that top-down perspective where you're like the all-seeing person, works really well for me. But what they did with Quill, the character in the game, and the developer was Polyarc, is the animator had some animations in there where Quill, this little tiny mouse, would use sign language to indicate some of its actions. Like if Quill thought you need to go around something, Quill's would do a little finger walk around and do actual sign language for some parts. And there was we did a story on it back when the game was coming out. Okay. Where they did where they had the mouse doing sign language, and they wanted to implement more. And who knows, with a new mouse, they might. But the idea that you can use your hands to communicate in that way, and this little mouse character who doesn't talk, you know, is a silent hero, has that little, can use those delicate little hands. Coming from an age when, you know, well, I'll get to that in a second, but coming from an age when game hands weren't all that complex, to being able to actually watch finger movements and track them and use hands to communicate is fascinating to me. And that's why I'm going to go with Moss, Quill from Moss, the little tiny mouse.
Aww.
Yeah, that's really neat. I did not know that game had like sign language in it. That's really cool.
Yeah, you can look it up, and I think more games should have it. I mean, maybe one day everyone will know sign language just so they can play video games. Or not. So what's one of your worst, your least favorites, Nathan?
All right, so one of my worst is a real worst, and the other one is like a best worst. I first want to give a special shout out to the best worst, which is the hands from GoldenEye on the Nintendo 64.
Mm-hmm.
I love those hands with every fiber of my being. Again, they were like very, that game was a huge part of my childhood, but I love that the hands were just these balled up fists. It's a very pure expression of what hands do in video games. They're for punching. But yeah, so you'd have these scenes where like there'd be scientists or like main characters even typing on keyboards, and they'd just be crushing their fists into them. They'd be like playing them like bongos or something. Not even like bongos, because their hands weren't flat. But yeah, it was so funny to me. Like, I loved that was this intrinsic humor the developers decided to just kind of, you know, not acknowledge, born of the limitations of that game. They're just like, I mean,
what do you want us to do? Yeah. What do you want us to do? Here, enjoy this.
Yeah, so that was extremely funny to me. Doubly so, because I was talking about how, like, you know, they're balled up fists for punching or whatever. They were actually more for like holding guns, because when you did a melee attack in first person, your character would do a karate chop with their hand open. And so there were all these weird incongruencies between what your characters would do when perceived by other players and what you were seeing. And it was just great. It was just really great. And so, like, were they good hands? No. Objectively, they were very bad. But it was just like, I don't know. It's one of the many things that I think makes that game memorable.
I've always thought it was funny because they call it, when you don't, in GoldenEye, when you like, you know, play with your friends and you don't have any weapons, like slappers only, but they're clearly chopping, and I never understood that.
Yeah.
Why not call it karate chopping?
Why not, indeed?
Ash, do you want to go next, or?
No, Nathan had a.
No, that's right. I'm so sorry. I'm so busy thinking about hands.
My actual bad one is one that I would be remiss if I did not mention, and that is the game Hand Simulator, which is a game on Steam where the basic idea is that you control each finger with a different key. So you use A, S, D, F, and the space bar, and that like lets you basically do like each individual finger for, you know, theoretically grabbing things if you're really lucky, and you like control the wrist and stuff too. And it's kind of like one of those games where a bunch of like basic and mundane tasks are incredibly hard to make any progress in.
So
you know, I feel like
hands.
Yeah, it's hand quap. Anyway, that game is, you know, varying levels of miserable to play. And so, yeah, it's a bad hand. It's a bad hand that you have incredible control over.
You're dealt a bad hand.
Yeah.
Ash, bad hands.
A bit of a controversial statement, but God of War, the most recent one, only because, not that they're like, you know, poorly rendered hands or anything like that, but looking at Kratos' hands, they just look so like ashy, and I want to put lotion on them because he's like out in like the Norse cold, and it's like his hands are all like dried and cracked, and he's still got like the ash from his family on him or whatever. And I'm like, shea butter, Kratos, please please just. And then like, I think, I may be misremembering, but I think like he has like dirt under his fingernails. And that's just like one of those like things about people that like absolutely turned me off, like dirty, like visible dirt, like under your, caked under your fingernails, which makes sense because he's Kratos and he's like gone on this big journey with his kids. But oh God, it just, it creeps me out. So I would like Kratos to get the shea butter. I headcanon him as a black man, so he knows better than to be out ashy, even though technically he has a reason for it. But still, like, come on, man.
I would really like it if it was like canon that Kratos, you know, doesn't give a shit about like anything except taking really good care of his hands. Like the rest of his body is like, you know, all beat up and bloodied and scratched and scarred. And then like you see his hands and they're just immaculate. Like
Bernie Mac's character in the Oceans movie where he talks about how he like goes to bed with like lotion and gloves on to keep his hands smooth and shit like that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that'd be a fun little detail that would humanize Kratos.
Yeah. Speaking of the dirty nail thing, we used to have, we used to make fun of developers and executives here at Kotaku. We still do. But we were really blatant about it back in the day. And there was this picture of, I think it was Sony Europe boss, David Reeves. And we used to call him Dirty Nail Reeves because there was a picture of him with his like nail, like on in the headshot. And his nail was filthy. And we used the picture over and over again and just kept calling him Dirty Nail Reeves. I can see the. I've pulled up the picture. I will not show it to you, but ew.
Thank God. No. Usually warm curiosity is enough for me, but not this time.
My least favorite hands of video gaming in general will be that whole entire era of 90s era 3D. GoldenEye will fall into it, where all the fingers are all fused together. My personal least favorite, and this is one you had to work for to even get to, is the video game Sin.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I vaguely remember that. Didn't they also do, like, some episodic sequels around the time that Half-Life was doing
episodic sequels? They were doing episodic sequels, but there was an Easter egg in Sin, where you could, if you use the no-clip command, go back into like the base, and the evil villainess had a hot tub, and she's doing stuff to herself. She's wearing a bikini, a red bikini, but she's pawing at herself with these horrible blocky hands. And I've had nightmares about it because she's like, and the pawed hands are reaching down under the water, and it's so horrible. It's like, no, it's like someone had their hands fused together in a horrible glue factory incident, but still loved themselves enough to love themselves in the back of their evil lair. It's horrible.
I mean, that's what Hitachi wands are for, sis. You don't need to live like that.
No, she's fine with her little stumps with nail polish. She's great.
Jesus.
She's making it done. Don't look that up, kids, because that's something you don't want to look up on the internet. Any more favorites we want to share? Rayman.
Oh, yeah. Rayman. The armless wonder.
He has no arms, but he has great hands. That's Rayman.
Good for him.
Mm-hmm. Any others, Nathan?
I mean, I think that we have to, we're obligated to mention the Power Glove, which was not an in-game hand, but was nonetheless one of the more infamous hand-shaped objects in video game history.
I think my partner might have a Power Glove. I don't think he does anymore, maybe. I don't know. I don't think I've seen one in the wild, ever.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. I have a good one I have to mention because I completely forgot to mention it. So the most recent Thief reboot was not a good game. I mean, I guess it was really mediocre. It just didn't, like, capture any of what made the old Thief games good. But the hand animations in that game were so good. Like, I mean, insanely good. Like, watching them now, you're like, man, these are better hands than, like, 99% of games today. Like, you would do all this, like, really tactile stuff. You'd, like, snuff out candles with your fingers. You'd be like, boop. And, like, that was really amazing looking. And then you'd also, like, when you were, like, trying to open things or, like, do other, like, you'd slide your hands along like the outer rims of like picture frames and paintings and stuff in this incredibly satisfying way,
and then you get a splinter.
I mean, somehow you wouldn't. I guess it was really high quality wood. But all of these things, like, I mean, for one, they contributed to the idea that you were this very delicate, very practiced thief. And then for two, it just like, it all felt so satisfying. It was just like ASMR for the eyes. And so, yeah, I mean, ASMR, like, for all of that game's flaws, its hand animations were just like chef kiss. So good.
You can't find, exactly. You can't find a better hand.
No, honestly, I'm not sure if you can.
Can't find a better hand. Can't find a better hand. Okay, I'm going to stop.
I was going to say, sing us out, Fahey, till the next segment.
No, my throat's got a little catch in it, and I don't want to, and I can't do Eddie Vedder without rolling my eyes back in my head, and then I kind of lose track of all time.
That's
fair. But we'll just go ahead and go to a break. We don't need to be fancy. You know, we can just, you know, clap our hands. Clap, because we got hands. I shouldn't have done that to my microphone. And we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, more hand stuff. You know you like the hand stuff.
Yes, there it is.
Hey, car shoppers. Car Guru's here with your word of the day. Confident. You know, that feeling you get when you're about to rock an outfit so killer, it's going to drop jaws worldwide. What if you could get that feeling while shopping for a car? With Car Gurus, you can. Shop more cars than you'll find on other leading car shopping sites. Find a deal that's really, really great. And see all the details that matter, like mileage, accident history, even days on lot. All on Car Gurus. Then, contact the dealer knowing your stuff and feeling more confident than, well, ever. Visit CarGurus.com today.
And we're back from our break. Here to talk more about hands, we have a very special guest. I will go ahead and let Nathan introduce that guest.
Yeah, so our guest today is Carrie Davis from Valve, a company you may have heard of because everyone's heard of Valve. Mm-hmm. And specifically, he worked on the hands in a game that came out very recently, Half-Life Alyx, which has, in my opinion, some of the more interesting and like kind of game-changing hands in video games, simply because like they are, I think, maybe the most important element of the game. But yeah, so to kind of kick it off, a question for you. So, given how the controllers for Valve Index work, I'm assuming you knew kind of from the get-go that hands were going to be like a center point of the video game of Alyx. What were the earliest prototypes of her hands like, though? Like, what could they do, and what were you kind of like intending for them to express? What was the design philosophy?
Hi, thank you.
Hey,
nice
hi,
to see you, Nathan.
Also, let our guests say hi.
No, that's all right. Yeah, the hands, we were kind of forced into it. You know, we were starting on Half-Life Alyx, and we had so many unknowns about developing a game in VR. It was kind of the Wild West. And so we were trying to not bite off more than we could chew. We were sort of taking everything as simply as possible to start with. And we did the same thing with the hands. We had a hand model, just a basic untextured hand model, and you could reach out and, you know, grab things, but the hands didn't do anything. Just the object would attach to your hand, and you'd move it around, and then you'd set it back down. And that's a really straightforward technique that a lot of games use, and it works really well, where the hand just disappears like a job simulator or vacation simulator from Alchemy Labs. Mm-hmm. It really suits the fidelity of their game, and sort of the interactions have the same cartoon feel as the game does. So we started simply, but then we kind of realized, like, we're making a Half-Life game, and part of Half-Life has always been the reality of the world. You really feel like you're in this world. And in Half-Life 2, a lot of that came from the physics simulation and the art direction and that sort of thing. So in Half-Life Alyx, you know, we knew that we were probably going to have physics, and we knew that we were going to have high fidelity art as much as possible. We didn't even know what the target would be for that yet. But hands were the big question. How do you make hands feel real and solid in the world? And we thought that, you know, to suit the Half-Life feel, we really needed the hands to be solid. So they needed to collide with the world. They needed to collide with objects. You needed to be able to pick objects up with your hands still visible. The fingers should wrap around the object and hold on to it. All the weapon interactions should have a lot of fidelity to them, a lot of polish to them, which of course made the job a whole lot more difficult once we realized that that was going to be our target, because these were so many unsolved questions that we had to figure out how to do. So yeah, initially we had just the very simplest basic hands, and then we just started experimenting from there to figure out how are we going to accomplish this, and can we get them looking good enough to actually fit the fidelity of the rest of the game, especially once the art started coming in and really looking spectacular. We were like, wow, we've got a lot of work to do to make these interactions work. Because like you said, Nathan, you know, in VR, hands are a critical part. They're, besides your head, your hands are your only other presence in the game. It's your physical personification, you know, it's your avatar inside the game. So you have to think about how they're going to be used very carefully.
So, like, pursuant to that question, because your hands are your avatar, were there anything that you guys put into Alex's hands to kind of show her personality? Like, Alex speaks, so you can kind of get a feel for, like, who she is through that. But, like, is there anything that you guys did with her hands that kind of, like, maybe helped, you know, in the personification of her?
The artist put a ton of work into that. And, you know, that's one of the first things that people mention is they look at their hands and they're like, oh, wow, there's dirt under the fingernails. And so, you know, that's part of it. You're trying to represent the world that Alex lives in. What is her day-to-day routine? What kind of activities is she involved in? She was always, you know, a tinkerer. So she was probably at the workbench at least a couple times a day. So her hands aren't going to be fresh and clean. Yeah, that was the main thing. I think the biggest issue we ran into was deciding what to do at the wrist, because we knew pretty early on that we were probably not going to try to do arms in the game. And so then what do you do with the back end of the hand? Is it just a sliced off piece of meat? You know, for a while we thought maybe we would sort of hint at the arms and have part of a wrist that went past the hand. And that just looked kind of weird. You had these articulated stumps on the back of your hand. So that was one of the big complications. But yeah, definitely the design of the hands. You should be able to look at your hands and feel like you're looking at Alex's hands.
Right. Man, the idea of like a hand being kind of disembodied but kind of not makes me think of like the cursor in like old RTS games. I think in one of the Warcrafts, there's a little skeleton hand that kind of, that'd be so weird to have in first person, though, to be like, I'm not a full person.
There's always that agreement between the devs and the player that, look, we're gonna present to you a representation of something, and you are going to have to suspend disbelief a little bit and buy into it. Like, we need to work together on this. And you're just trying to figure out where is that middle ground? How far can we go without actually ruining the experience so that your suspension of disbelief will buy into what we're giving you? I think we managed to get that with the hands. At least that's what the feedback has been. So
it's funny because we were talking about ancient hands in our last episode, and Nathan was talking about GoldenEye and how there'd be a character typing with their hands just kind of thumping, their solid hands thumping against the keyboard, and kind of like it's the same compromise, but years later, we're now, instead of going, should we have the fingers not move and just thump on stuff, to now we're like, well, where do the wrists go?
Right.
Oh my gosh.
Or you give your animators the task of, we need to be able to play piano, and we want you to animate an entire piano piece so that you can play it at the piano. There was some thought about that when the piano came in. You know, it was fun and goofy, and people were like, this is ridiculous. You can't play piano in the game. We should just cut that. And then there was some extreme thought of, well, gee, we know where your hand is on the keyboard. What if we just let the player sort of move their hand up and down the keyboard, and we fill in the key presses along the way?
Oh, so
you're
neat.
Sort of, you're improvising playing the piano just by moving your hand up and down the keys, which would have been really cool and taken a ton of dev time and pushed the game out another year probably. So, you know, at some point you just got to take what you got and be happy with it.
I mean, that would be amazing though. Like, the headline would just be, you know, Half-Life Alyx delayed for a year because of a piano.
Yeah. I still want to do that. I think that would be a cool side project sometime.
But yeah, you were talking about the kind of like agreement that, you know, you end up having between players and developers, and like, you know, just being able to believe in the space and embody your character and everything. And so I was wondering, because like, on one hand, you know, the game allows you to pick up all sorts of objects and to like do all sorts of, you know, very tactile interactions. Because I think in VR, if you don't have that, the illusion kind of falls apart. Like if you see something you can't pick up, you're like, oh, never mind. I'm in
it
a video game.
It reminds you that you're in a game, yeah.
Right. But at the same time, you can't haul off and like punch people, which kind of bums me out. Yeah. Like I ended up, you know, I feel like that still breaks the illusion a little bit. And so like, why did you end up drawing the line there?
I think that was one of those things that the overall product and schedule, we had reached a point where we were ready to ship it. And there's always more that you can do. And that I think that would have been the logical next step. Because some of the emergent play that you saw, like the video clip of the person blocking the head crab out of the air with a chair and launching it through a window, which I watched 1,000 times on a loop because it was so cool to see. You know, that was the kind of stuff that was emerging very close to the end of the project when we were happy with it. And we'd announced it and we were talking about ship dates. And it's like, wow, it's really coming together. And by the end, we started to see a lot of opportunity. There was a whole bunch of more fertile ground that could be explored now that we had answered, you know, the 5,000 questions that all of this was built on. But at some point, you have to just stop asking new questions and answering them because you can do that forever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think the next step could have been melee combat. That was actually starting to come together a little bit. And, you know, people have gone in and modded the game and actually implemented various versions of that. It could have been successful. I think we could have accomplished it, but again, it would have added another months or years to the schedule, and it wasn't necessary. I think for this iteration of the game, I think it was good where it landed. Mm-hmm.
Before that, like, what was the toughest thing or toughest action that was for your team to make Alex's hands do? Like, where was a big like sticking point for you guys? Like, what was like, oh man, if we could just get over this, we feel a lot better.
Yeah. You know, picking things up and throwing things feel natural is incredibly difficult. And everybody has this problem. You ask any VR dev and it's something they run into if they're interacting with things. The main thing, you know, in the real world, you have this physical feedback. You've got contact on your skin when you touch something you're about to pick up. If it has some mass, you can put some you know, pressure into it mm-hmm. when you pick it up. And we've all had that case where you go to pick up a cup that you think is full and it's empty and you end up knocking it over because you expected to have more pushback when you touched it. And so all these interactions become very natural. You don't focus exactly on the thing you were about to pick up. You just know it's there and you reach out and pick it up while you're having a conversation or doing something else or watching TV. So to try to do that in VR, you know, you want that to be the experience, but in VR, you can't feel the thing. It has no mass. It has no weight. You don't know when your hand is next to it unless you stand there and look directly at the object and very carefully move your palm into position and then curl your fingers. And, you know, the point of a video game is to make you feel more powerful and accomplished than you can in real life. And in this case, it just makes you feel less powerful and more klutzy. And it makes you feel incompetent, and it's annoying, and it's frustrating. So the biggest problem is, how do we let people pick up things, grab things, throw them, interact with them without having to think about it so much? And it turns out the gravity gloves bought a lot of that for us, because as soon as you pull something from a distance, we know it's going to end up in your hand because we make it end up in your hand. So that's kind of a freebie. Picking stuff up off of tables, there's a whole lot of, you know, cheating in there that we do. It's all about providing the illusion of reality. So when you reach out for something, we can tell that your hand is approaching an object and we decide, okay, we think you're about to pick this up. So we can see that your hand is moving too far. So let's pull the hand in the game back a little bit and line it up better with the object so it doesn't just knock it over. Or we see that you've only reached part way and now you've pulled the trigger to grab it, but you're not close enough to actually grab it. So let's just go ahead and move the hand a little bit further and let it grab that object.
Wow.
So we're always trying to anticipate what your action is. And it might be wrong, because if you reach toward an object and your hand is already in a fist, does that mean you want to punch the object and knock it out of the way? Or are you intending to grab it and you just don't realize that you're holding the controller in a way that has made your hand into a fist? So we're always trying to sort of deduce what the player intent is and then just do it for them. Like, we know you can't tell where this thing is. We know you can't feel it or tell how heavy it is, but we know what you're trying to do. So we're just going to make that happen for you. And it should feel like you did it. And in most cases, people don't realize that we're doing all these little tricks.
Oh, well, now I'm going to. I play a game. It's going to be like, oh, now I'm going to give myself a complex by reaching out and grabbing the freaking wine bottles with their fluid motion.
You're going to make an itemized list of every time that Valve incorrectly guessed what you were going to do and then send it to them. You're like,
we do incorrectly guess sometimes, but the nice thing is we know what the critical actions are. Obviously, weapons are important. Ammo is important. So if you're doing anything near ammo or weapons, we just assume that's what you intend to do and we do it for you.
Yeah.
So there are cases where you can be trying to do something subtle close to a very important object, and it's really a struggle because that important object keeps trying to steal your focus and steal your interaction. So we try to avoid that as much as possible, but yeah, that's more a level design issue.
I will say that I played the game. It's one of the last VR games I played up until recently. I'm paralyzed from the chest down, so I'm in a wheelchair. And I will say that though I had some problems with some of the things I had to crouch to get, a little bit, the game did an amazing job of helping me along. I think there was a puzzle right before you get to the first zombies where you had to do the lock and that big door comes open and you have to reach down and turn the things. And that's like the first place I encountered issues, but it felt almost like the game kind of compensated in a way and made sure I was grabbing the right things and twisting the right locks. And it worked out really well. For someone who's stuck in a chair, I mean, I can't lean forward very much. I can't bend down very much, but it worked for me. And I was very impressed.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, it gave me
I'm glad to hear that.
It felt a little freeing.
Hmm. Yeah, there's an established history in, you know, flat screen games of dealing with color blindness and reduced mobility and, you know, people who can't hear the sound, and you have captions and subtitles, and you know, there's a lot of established ways to solve those problems. But then you move into VR and it's like, wow, there's a whole new space of issues here that we need to solve, because these are great games and everybody should be able to play them. And how do we make that possible? The other thing was the one-handed mode, which was interesting. We didn't come up with a no-handed mode, but we thought if you at least have one functional hand, you should be able to play this game. And there were a group of people that put a ton of work into making that happen. And it actually, it became an interesting mechanic that you can go back and replay the game in single-handed mode, and you develop some new tricks and techniques that feed into that make it a different game, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, it is really neat. I mean, speaking of things that I think probably aided in the game's accessibility overall, you mentioned it earlier, but obviously the yanking mechanic, the ability to pull items to you is one of the, like, another central element of the game. Something that, like, I mean, I think that low-key, it's maybe the closest I've ever felt to, like, having a superpower.
It was a force power.
Because I like, marathoned the game. I reviewed it for us, so I had to play it, like, all in one go. And I remember, like, when I got done playing it, after I beat it, my brain kept telling me, like, you can just yank that thing. I, like, went to the grocery store the next day, and I was like, you don't need to get close to that shelf. You can just pull it down. I like had to wean myself off of thinking that I was Alex. But yeah, I mean, how did y'all come up with that, just that entire thing? Like, again, what was the kind of philosophy underlying that mechanic? And like, how many different iterations did it go through before you were like, yes, this is what we want. This does what we want it to. And this like fits the fiction of our universe without being, you know, too much or too weird.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things that hit its final form really quickly. I mean, it came in because of the simple frustration with people working on the team who didn't want to be bending and reaching and trying to get close to things all the time. It was just frustrating. And we also knew that, you know, one of the probably weakest aspects of VR is still movement. It's a challenge, and there's solutions, but none of them are super great. You know, the free movement is the best, I think, if your stomach can handle it. And mine can't, so I'm one of those people that just can't play that way. But we knew that if we could reduce the amount of moving that was necessary in the game, and obviously it's a big game, so you still move a lot, but when you're in a room and you're trying to solve a puzzle, you're trying to accomplish a task, if you could do that without having to constantly be teleporting around the room in the worst case, then it would let you sit in the game and feel more present and not be constantly reminded that you're in a game. And so we very quickly thought, well, let's just have a way to target a distant object and bring it to you. And because we have a really nice physics engine in Source, we just went ahead and used physics to throw it across the level towards you. And then that was that. And then we just used that as a tool for ourselves pretty much and realized quickly it was going to be a mechanic in the game. I don't know that we were sure how it would come out at the end, because we weren't sure on the triggering at the time. How do we actually activate it? Do you have to turn this on and then target an object and then pull a button to bring it to you? For a while, you would target the object and make a fist and then open your fist to pull it to you. All these different triggering methods that were kind of complicated and confusing for people. And so there were challenges. We also thought maybe it'll get annoying after a while, especially once... Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
Oh, no, I was just imagining we didn't have a control for it, so every time you moved your hand, 25 things from the environment come shooting at you.
Yes, that was one of the fears, too. And, I mean, if you pay attention to it, you'll notice it is constantly targeting things as you move your hands around. And we wanted that to be noticeable and visible for the player as feedback that you've now targeted something. But we also didn't want this target effect going off constantly as you're walking around a level just trying to enjoy the atmosphere. So there was a lot of balancing that went into that. But ultimately, over the years, we had this mechanic in the game. And of course, as devs, we were using it thousands of times a day. And it just never got boring. And it never got tiring. And it was always kind of fun. And so we thought, well, obviously... if you can get a mechanic that you do 1,000 times a day and it's still fun, then you know you've got something that is gold and has to go in the game. So it was just kind of something that we did out of necessity. And by good fortune, it turned out to be a really nice mechanic that suited the game and supported the whole rest of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question. I haven't been able to play the game for myself. I've watched people
Ashley.
Play. I know. Well, the Valve Index is $1,000.
If only you
help
worked
me out
for
here.
A company that had equipment that maybe you could borrow or something.
We got to call up Riley to pay for me to have a Valve Index. But so one of the things that, like, when people play those kinds of, like, expression games and things where you can, like, draw, like, the first thing they're going to do is, like, do something rude. Like, you're going to draw a dick.
Of course.
Oh, no, like, right? You know? So... from what I understand with Alex, you can, like, control, like, her fingers independently, right?
If you have the knuckles controllers, then you can control independent fingers. Yes.
So my question is, like, do you build in the ability to make rude gestures, or do you just, like, okay, yeah, this is like a close approximation or whatever, they can do whatever they want, you don't want to encourage that kind of behavior, right? Or do you think, like, people are going to be upset if you can't flip somebody off, so we might as well just, like, figure out or, like, interpret, like, if this character or if they're putting these buttons the right way, we're just going to make them do it? Like, is there any thought process behind that?
Oh, absolutely, of course. I mean, we're all people too, and we have the same absurd senses of humor as everyone else. Obviously, if you wanted to be really dominating about it and say, no, if you are in your physical hand holding up just your middle finger, we're not going to replicate that in the game. But that's just kind of silly. I mean, if you can do it with your physical body, then you're in the game, do it with your physical body. We actually have code that recognizes various gestures, like the middle finger and a peace sign and thumbs up and stuff like that. We put the code in there just because we thought we would want it and we'd want to be able to recognize it. And we never actually ended up using it. I think there were some experiments with, flipping off the Combine soldiers and having them react in some way. it didn't really suit the story. I mean, it was a fun gag, but, why would Combine care? We ended up not really using it, but the mechanic was there. And the other problem is anybody who's not using Knuckles now loses on that whole aspect. So you can do it as a level of fidelity, as a level of polish, like we had with our finger tracking. If you have the knuckles, you can move Alex's fingers individually and everything. But it can't be critical to the game, because otherwise a bunch of your audience now can't actually execute that mechanic because they don't have the controller that's necessary.
Coming soon, Half-Life Alex sequel, Half-Life Alex and Knuckles.
Yeah. That's right. I would love to be able to do sign language with the controllers and recognize the sign language and communicate that way. It would be so interesting.
That would be
amazing. I
don't
know if we quite have the fidelity yet, but that would be really cool.
Yeah, we were just talking about that in one of our previous segments here, because Moss from Polyarch, Quill the little mouse, would do a little bit of a sign language with their little fingers, even though they only had four fingers as a mouse.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, they had some...
That was a good game, but I don't remember that.
Yeah, yeah. If they were trying to tell you how to do a, if they were trying to tell you how to do like a, a puzzle, like to go around something, she'd do like the little walking maneuvers on her hand.
Oh, okay.
And try to, yeah, you can actually, yeah. Yeah, if you look it up, they wanted to do more, but they didn't have time. But hopefully, who knows?
Go back and play that again. You know, I was just thinking about that. So I'm learning French on Duolingo, and they have all the lessons where you speak to it, and it does the voice recognition, and then scores your pronunciation of the words. And that would be a really interesting way to learn sign language, is in virtual reality, where you actually have to perform the gestures, and it can rate if you're doing them correctly or not, and practice conversations. And so much stuff I want to make in VR. I wish I had more time.
Yeah, I was going to say, make that right now.
I know. Yeah, I mean, well,
how
when I
hard
retire,
could it
maybe.
Really be?
Yeah, it's probably simple. I don't even know sign language, so that's not important.
Yeah,
just figure it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, with regard to like the gestures and stuff, one thing I was wondering is like, because I think you still see a lot of like emergent gameplay in that regard. Like a lot of people, you know, they'll be in the middle of like an intense firefight. They'll like maybe, like I was watching a clip earlier where somebody like hid in a like an outhouse. And then, like, would open the door and shoot people and, like, at one point flip them off and, like, close the door again. And, like, there's still a lot of room for expression, even if enemies don't react to it. There's a lot of room for just, like, embodying yourself, doing what you would do in these situations, throwing your hands up, being, like, expressing that you are frustrated or, you know, just waving at people or whatever you want to do. How much did you take into account when making the game that players would do that? And then that would be a way for them to, for instance, disarm some of the tension they were feeling or to like soothe themselves, to regulate their own emotions. And like in making a game that was as frightening, frankly, as Half-Life Alyx, how much did you think like, well, players are going to be able to kind of, you know, control where they are at in addition to what we are trying to make them feel?
Yeah, that sort of falls into the category of recognizing what players are going to want to do, what their desires are going to be, and making sure that that is available to them. So the one thing that didn't get in, which I'm really sad about, and I feel kind of dumb because it wouldn't have been that difficult. People always wanted to pick up bottles by the neck and then smash the bottle on a tabletop.
I know.
And then wield the broken bottle piece. You know, and it just would have involved swapping out for the broken model and putting it in the hand and replacing the bottle that was there, and all perfectly doable. It just, it was so low on the priority list, it didn't happen. But those are the kind of things you think about, especially with the playtesting. We do so much playtesting, and you see players try to do things. Or, like you say, Nathan, they're in a really tense situation, and they're kind of trying to soothe themselves or, you know, do something humorous that makes them laugh so that they can feel better about it, because you feel very alone in VR sometimes, which is why we always had the voice of Russell coming through to make you feel at least like you weren't the only person in this world. And so making those things available that the players can do them when they want to is just sort of the key. You can't really predict, you know, you can't force players to do certain things, but you can certainly make it possible for them to do what they might want to do.
Wow, are we just all going to be quiet now?
Yeah, it's quiet time now. 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was very profound.
You're all just absorbing all these incredible,
yes, all of your insights. Thank you so much for them.
Yeah, this is all I've thought about for the past few years, so it's very burned into my brain. It's hard to think about other things. You were saying, Nathan, being at the store trying to grab things from a distance. I've been doing the same thing all last week. I was doing some work in Left 4 Dead 2, and I keep trying to pick up Molotovs and pipe bombs from a distance. Constantly. I can't stop doing it. And it's like, I'm not even in VR. Why am I doing this? But it's just, it becomes a part of your regular routine. I should be able to get that even though it's not next to me.
Right.
We have to find a way to do that.
I mean, that's the next step, right? Now that you've made virtual gravity gloves, Valve just needs to make the real thing.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, you guys make hardware. Piece of cake. Yet another one of those projects you could probably just knock out in a day. I don't know.
Yeah. There's probably no liability issues associated with that.
Yeah.
You can just cause objects to come flinging towards you.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine a crime being done with any of that.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That would be a good heist. Anyway.
From outside the building, launched a knife across the room into the man's back.
See, now I can think of one. You've ruined it. Well, now we're going to use VR realness to do crimes.
Why not?
on that note.
Yes, we officially encourage that.
Yeah.
Go out, everybody.
Do crimes.
Do crimes.
That should be your one takeaway from this podcast.
That's
do crimes. You heard it here on Kotaku.
Virtual crimes.
Kotaku split screen podcast where we encourage you to do, wait, virtual crimes?
Yeah. Virtual crimes and real crimes.
It's somewhere to start. Yeah, okay. If you do, balance them is what we're saying. You don't want to do too many virtual crimes without a healthy amount of real crime. This has gone,
everything in moderation.
This has gone completely off the rails. We should hold on with our hands, which was the topic of this week's podcast. Hey, everybody. We've been talking to Kerry Davis from Valve, who did a lot of handwork on Half-Life Alyx, one of the best VR games created thus far. Seriously, if you have the means, play Half-Life Alyx VR. And if you have to read the Half-Life Alyx novelization, wait for that. Any way you can get Half-Life Alyx, go get it now.
That's right. The soundtrack is pretty good on Steam.
Thanks so much for being with us, Kerry. We really appreciate it. It was incredibly informative.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah, we're never this informative.
I've heard your show. It's great. It's always great.
Thank you.
Yay. Really appreciate it.
We win. You've been listening to the Kotaku Split Screen Podcast. You can reach us via email at splitscreen@kotaku.com and on Twitter at Uncle Fahey, that is me, at Vahn16, V-A-H-N-16, that is Nathan, or at Ad Astra, A-D-A-S-H-T-R-A. Took me a second. That is Ashley. Our producer is Michaela Hack, and our sound engineer is Ryan Allen. Thanks for listening, everybody.